Hello and a very good morning to you. Packed programme for you this morning. Show me the munitions. Kyiv's frustration at Western dithering. We speak to a Ukrainian MP. Cautionary advice to GPs about the unknown cause of a spike in hepatitis cases in children. Changed utterly. Could this be the Northern Ireland election that shifts the political compass points? And ripples in the rock pools. We go seashore wildlife spotting with Éan and Ilona. Our regular GP, Dr. Maura Finn, is also going to be joining me later on in the programme to be discussing kidney issues, infections, kidney stones, dialysis and so on. So if you have any questions for Dr. Finn about the renal system, get them into us now. We're going to try and get to as many of them as possible. Text them on 51551 or email todaycb@rte.ie. Our Twitter handle also at Today with Claire, but keep your questions for Dr. Finn to email and or text, please. You heard Brian talking about the fresh ultimatum from Russia to the Ukrainian forces in Mariupol. In a video message posted on Facebook this morning, the commander of the Ukrainian Marines in the steelworks there said his forces were maybe facing our last days, if not ours. Elsewhere, Russia's offensive in the east of the country is picking up pace. So the question this morning is Ukraine getting the materiel, the munitions that it needs from the West? Is our reliance on Russian oil and gas the same as arming the Russians effectively? And what is the view in Kyiv of what action we are and aren't taking here? To discuss this, I'm joined on the line now by Kira Rudik, a Ukrainian MP and leader of the Hulos political party. Very good morning to you, Kira. An awful lot for us to get through there, but I want to talk to you first, please, about what day-to-day life is like now in Kyiv. Does it feel to you like the threat of violence in the capital city, at least, has receded somewhat?
Well, the life here is getting back to normal, like the way that it can. Though we are telling people not to come back, we are also telling people that they should figure out where they be the most useful for their motherland. So they are making the choice. And you know, today there was even a traffic jam in the morning, and it was surprisingly good to feel that there are more and more people coming back. However, you know, for the last couple of days, we learned that nowhere in Ukraine you can be safe. Even in the far west, almost in the border with Poland, the city of Lviv was bombarded by the Russian missiles, with 7 people being killed and 10 wounded. And before we will get the protection of our skies resolved, it will always be like that. You figure out like where it is less dangerous, more dangerous, but it's dangerous everywhere. Russians basically can hit any location in my country with their missiles.
Of course. And if somebody was to make the calculation that they would be better making a contribution from Kyiv rather than from abroad, presumably there's only so much resources, only so much food, water and power to go around that you can't really afford for large numbers of people to come back yet, could you?
Well, the supply chain are being renewed, so it's fine for Kyiv as it is right now to accept more and more people back. However, if we go back to the square one, when we were preparing for a siege, when we were making sure that every single household has enough food, water and electricity, then yes, then we'll need to evacuate people again.
Let me talk to you about your nearest neighbours and their support for you now, or your European neighbours and their support for you. President Zelensky said last night in an address that if Ukraine had access to better weapons comparable to the ones used by Russia, that we would already have ended this war. And it's quite a while ago now since German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said that they had entered a turning point in their relationship with Russia. But those oil and gas flows remain unchanged, and you haven't seen any heavy weapons yet from Germany. Does it feel like you're just not being supported, or does it feel like you're being abandoned?
So, first of all, Germany and France are the two nations that we knew it will be the most complicated to deal with, in because they are very much reliable on Russia, not only with gas and oil, but with all the business relations, political relations. But I want to concentrate on that there was a turning point a couple of days ago, and after it, United States, Canada, and Britain agreed to give us the heavy weapons that we need, the heavy artillery. And that would be one of the answers to the question about the protection of our skies. And this makes me so much more confident in the point that we are going to win this war. However, and I'm coming back to the question of Germany and France and other European countries, so the amount of money that President Biden promised us for the support for the weapons, etc., it's 800 million as of right now. And for the last months of war, European countries have paid Russia $35 billion. So it's $1 billion every day. I think it's enough money to continue the war and to maybe start one or two additional wars, and they will still be doing okay. So if we, like, if in terms of getting weapons, we are looking at our real allies, like United States, like United Kingdom, Canada, Poland, Baltic countries. From Germany and France, we are basically saying, okay, it's fine for us if you don't get us weapons. You know, Germany sent us 500 helmets or something, like something extremely...
small?
How should I say it in a good, polite way? I would say it doesn't meet the occasion right now, the amount of support. So, but we are saying maybe you should just stop paying Russia. That would be an already a fantastic help from your side. Just give it up on your reliance on their gas and oil, and do it for yourself. Don't do it for us. Because, you know, we in 6 months, there would be a heating season start. And does anybody in the world think that Putin will become like a better man by that time? And he would say, OK, here's the lower prices and here are the good agreements that I will honor. No, I think he will be using energy as a weapon, as he was doing before. And the countries that would be still relying on his energy resources, they would be screwed. And this is the reality.
Can we try and focus in on some local developments, local news? There's a humanitarian corridor to evacuate women and children and the elderly that has supposedly been agreed in Mariupol today. Do you have any faith that it will be different this time, that will actually work?
Well, look, today is day 56 of war. And there has not been a single humanitarian convoy that was able to get out on Russian's word. So the only way and only time that we were able to take women and children out was when Ukrainian army was taking over the bloodline there, like the lifeline, the road that is going to Zaporizhia. Then we were able to get 200 cars. And all the other times when we had an agreement from Russians that they will let our people out, they would just have started firing arms at them. So I pray to God, this is one of my prayers, that they will let women and children out. But the chances of it are still very low. And we know, we are talking to the military there, they said, they wouldn't trust Russians a tiny bit.
And what do you understand, or what is the latest news from Donbass, from the eastern region where that assault has begun now along a 300-mile front?
So they are minor battles. The preparation for the larger battle is still on. There are minor battles for different smaller villages. And what we see is Russians are trying to attack from many sides at once. So yesterday the attack was on 7 fronts. And there has not been like significant changes over the night. But what we see is that they will be pushing forward. So the issue that we are seeing right now is, you know, in between the day when Biden or Boris Johnson or whoever else or Trudeau is saying, okay, we are giving Ukraine these weapons, and the time that we are actually getting the weapons, it's like 2 to 3 weeks. So we only right now are starting getting what we were promised 2 weeks ago. Does anybody even remember what we were promised 2 weeks ago? Things are moving very fast. So this is why every single day that we are not in the direct fight just yet is winning a time for the logistics for all the support that we are getting and will be getting. And here I just can extend my gratefulness to the Irish people and to all the support that you got us. You know, this Ireland is the first country that when we met with our partners there, with the politicians, and we looked in our paperwork and we said, oh, you guys, you gave us like literally everything that you had. Like, we cannot ask you for anything more, because we definitely know that you just like, you know, a good host. You took everything and said, okay, this goes to Ukraine. And for this, I bow to your people. That is really honorable.
It's interesting you say that, because it was actually my next question. Is there nothing else that you would like to see small countries like Ireland give to Ukraine? Obviously, we are not Germany, we are not the United Kingdom or Canada or the United States, but is there nothing else that we could do?
So you are taking care of our refugees, and for that, I am also extremely grateful. And I unfortunately can say that there will be more. There will be more people who will be looking for shelter, and they would need support. They will need a friendly hand. And that is something to get ready to. If you have additional weapons that you can buy somewhere, that would be fantastic. But I think we are right now like wiping up everything on the planet Earth that we can buy or get. We know that there is at least 200 people from Ireland who came in and are fighting for us. And for that, I am extremely grateful. So I can tell you that Ireland, of many countries, can look itself in the mirror and say, well, we did right. We did okay.
Kira Rudick, leader of the Chulos party in Kiev, thank you very much for talking to us, and stay safe.
Thank you.
Now, Kevin Byrne is a retired Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel, and he is also an airport safety and security auditor. He joins me on the line now. Good morning to you, Kevin.
Good morning, Philip. How are you?
Good. How different do you think that the war that Russia fights now in Donbass is going to be to the way that we saw them unsuccessfully prosecute the war around Kyiv?
I think it's a different kettle of fish, because we have a new general in charge. They're alleged to have lost 7 generals, which is quite extraordinary in the campaign so far. I can't believe it's day 56 already, and we're talking about the Donbass region now. They have done greater preparations because, of course, they've got shorter supply lines. They're coming in from Russia. They're coming through terrain there that has been provided support for them, because there's pro-Russian forces there. So it's a different kettle of fish in every sense of the word. The problem they have is that they're on such a wide front, they need literally thousands of troops, thousands of tanks and armored vehicles, and they need supply lines that can keep them going 3 or 4 or 5 days. The cutoff date is the 9th of May, I think, because that's been spoken of as having to deliver a success to Mr. Putin. The problem is that the forces there, the Ukrainians, have been digging in for a long, long time, and they have been able to provide defenses that haven't been seen since World War II, I think.
And in terms of what way they're actually going to approach this, do you think that we're likely to see them softening up those Ukrainian defences with protracted ammunition artillery barrage?
Yes, they have these giant 152mm howitzers. It's a traditional Soviet and now Russian doctrine to attack all the defences. They probably know where they are, because, of course, they've got quite good imagery from drones. They've got spies on the ground. They know where all the defences are. They will attack them with as much ammunition as they can, and they've got a greater supply than they had before. And they will approach on different axes of approach, not just down the one road, as was the case near Kyiv. The problem with them is, apparently, the terrain may not be hard hard enough to support the weight of their APCs and tanks, and that will confine them to routes, in other words, hard metal roads, and the defenders will have a huge volume of anti-armour weaponry because everybody in all the videos is carrying one on their back. Expensive items, very good Western quality stuff. It's easy enough to fire, and there's going to be a killing zone put in place on all these roads, crossroads, and that kind of thing. So it's going to be a great battle of attrition, I think, starting soon.
Okay, but in terms of what they have to defend themselves with now, are they just going to have to sit there and soak up or absorb all of that artillery?
I'm afraid so, because it would appear they don't have enough howitzers of their own. They use the same ones, believe it or not. The equipment, if they capture it, can be reused and has been the case in tanks and APCs captured so far. But they may not have enough, because I don't understand why, when the Russians fire their howitzers in, they don't have what we call counter-battery fire. It would appear that the Ukrainians don't have either enough guns or enough ammunition to keep the attrition rate firing back on the Russians. So the Russians have a huge advantage there, and there's no shortage there. That's why they're asking for heavy weaponry coming in from places like the Czech Republic or Slovakia or anywhere else they can get it from.
Kevin, can I go back in time just a few days to the sinking of this Russian warship, the Moskva, in the Black Sea? How do you think the Ukrainians managed to do that?
It was a most unusual thing, because I mentioned in previous transmissions that most days of the week, if you looked up, if you could, over the Black Sea, there's a drone there flying at 55,000 feet or 11 miles. It flies out from a base in Cyprus, usually, believe it or not, and it spends 24 or 30 hours in the air, and it's got fantastic sensors. That is reporting back every ship and every movement on the Black Sea to somebody somewhere. How you pick out one ship in a fleet, I don't know, but presumably you can do it by transmissions or by size or by radar picture, whatever. That had to have been given in a latitude, longitude to somebody on the ground in the Ukraine to fire a Neptune missile or two across the sea to do that, because it's beyond visual range. It's a very high precision item to do. And to hit the target you want, there's no doubt in my mind, having seen the pictures of the damaged ship before it sank, it was burning from stem to stern, and it was very seriously damaged. And as we know, it sank. And I'm pretty sure people died on board that ship. It was a fine precision piece of marksmanship, to say the word. But the retaliation now, of course, is coming, because there's counterfire now with long-range rockets by the Russians onto certain features, even as far west as Lviv has just been spoken about. Mm. There's no part of the country that the Russians can't hit if they really want to, and that's a dangerous piece.
Well, can we stress test that statement for one second? Because I'm thinking of the Marines and the steelworks in Mariupol, who have now been given another deadline of 2 p.m. today. Surely, if the Russians have the missile capacity that you're talking about, that particular drama would have ended long before now, that they could have just blown them all up.
No, because the defence of built-up areas is a particular kind of fighting. It soaks up 4 to 5 number of troops than would be the case in Donbass, where it's open ground. Donbass looks a little bit like the area around Athlone, believe it or not. It's that wide open, you see, so that suits in many ways the attacker. Going into a built-up area where the defenders have been there for many months and know every street, every path, every building, is a very dangerous place to be. And unless I'm wrong, I thought I saw in the video last night, Nats troops being deployed from helicopters and so forth.
These are the special forces.
They will not be upset by this kind of fighting. They'll be well used to it, well trained in it. They're not the usual conscripts who might be upset by seeing their comrades cut down. So it's a very savage and brutal way of fighting. Unfortunately, it's complicated by the fact that apparently in the basements and elsewhere there are civilians there. It's not just soldier versus soldier, and that's a very tragic place to be.
Okay, Kevin, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. That's Kevin Byrne. Coming up after the break, the European Centre for Disease Control is investigating an increase of hepatitis cases in children.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.